Welcome to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
Cindy, we passed Memorial Day.
Yes. What
it
a good
is
holiday.
The nicest time of the year. And, of course, to my mind, the first thing I think of is the food that goes with the nicest time of the year.
Me too, because I was just up in my garden mere moments ago.
So what's in the garden?
Well, what's really exciting is...
And what do the animals already eat?
Oh, my gosh. Something ate all the leaves off my strawberry plants. So I had gone out of town for my sister's 60th birthday party in the mountains in North Carolina. Come home, and there aren't any leaves on my strawberry plants. I'm like, no.
I did not do that.
Oh, my gosh. So, my zucchini plants are producing blossoms and little baby zucchinis. I'm so excited. And I planted fennel. And one of the bulbs I'm going to pull probably tomorrow. So I wish I had planted more. I may try and seed some more and see if I can get some more going in time. But my cilantro, I have almost an entire 14-foot bed of cilantro, and it's all like baby cilantro and super cute, and I can't wait. And my English peas are looking really good. I'm almost tempted to just pull the plants and make soup out of the greens because, you know, I love those greens, especially when they're tender like that. But I'm not going to. I, of course, want to see the peas come to the pods. But, it's super exciting. And there are a lot of weeds up there. So I did a lot of work this morning. You know, and I was talking to George about, he was talking about his zucchini plants. So we're going to get our first baby zucchini with blossoms on Friday.
And, yeah, he sent me a picture of flowers.
Yeah, I ordered 6 cases for everybody. So hopefully we'll all have some fun with that.
Well, I look forward to the same summer food since I was a kid. That's some kind of meat on the grill.
Definitely.
And it's absolutely peaches.
Oh, gosh, and that's just a ways off, but can't wait.
That's not as far off as you think.
Well, it'll be here before we know it. That's true.
And corn,
the
absolutely.
Best. I love corn, yeah.
And it seems like you have a little more permission in the summertime to eat ice cream. I don't know, but that's definitely on my list.
Very good thing about summer.
So we're going to have a few folks talking about these things joining us today. First will be Eric Oosterwijk from Fells Point Meats. We've talked about grilling before, but literally I'd like him to give us a little education on cuts of what to grill, exactly what's going on in the meat market and what to grill.
He's the real deal. He is an amazing butcher.
He knows his
stuff. Has amazing skills. Yeah, and love Eric so much. So I'm excited to hear what he has to say.
Well, let's get Eric on the line then.
Okay. Hey, Eric, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Thanks for being with us today.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Happy to be here.
It's summertime. Yes, I still want hamburgers and hot dogs on the grill, but I want a steak and I want other meats. Give us some advice on what you think is going to be great for grilling this summer.
Well, there's plenty of stuff out there. As we always know, we go to a supermarket and we get lots of ribeyes and strips and porterhouse and T-bones and rib steaks, and essentially they're all the same. And the rib steak is a ribeye with the bone in it, and the strip is really part of the porterhouse, and it has the fillet on the other side of the bone. So no matter in what size or however you buy it, you're pretty much doing the same thing on the grill. There's a lot of alternatives out there worth trying for sure, and some of them are very good, and personally probably like them better than any of those three. And some of those are less expensive, and your regular supermarket should have all these. If not, maybe your local butcher shop. And one of them is, which I particularly like and is inexpensive, is a chuck steak. A chuck steak is basically the extension of the ribeye. So where they split the animal between the ribeye and the chuck, the ribeye stops and the chuck starts. And most butcher shops and supermarkets cut 3 or 4 steaks off that chuck roll and sell that as a chuck steak. So you have the extension of a ribeye steak. My take on ribeye steaks is the ones on the chuck side versus the strip side are always better tasting anyway. Have a little bit more fat in it, but great, great flavor and stand up real well on the grill. And that's the kind of steak that does really well on charcoal and maybe even a firewood pit. Of course, it works on the gas grill too, but that charcoal just gives it a little extra flavor to it.
What's a good size to get a chuck steak cut?
You want something an inch. Inch and a quarter, inch and a half thick. That doesn't mean that 3/4 of an inch. It depends how hot your grill is. A lot of times when a steak is too thin, Tony, it doesn't really matter what steak it is. If the grill is not hot enough, you cannot get the right temperature on the inside. If you wanted that steak medium rare, that grill has to be medium rare. It has to be really hot because you want to make sure it's you have a nice char on the outside. If the grill is not hot enough and you're waiting for that char to happen, then you might be already in the medium well to maybe even more done state. So a thicker steak will help for that. And you know, this way you can still have medium rare on the inside. So I'd say an inch thick, an inch and a quarter on most of these steaks for grilling.
And so a chuck steak sounds like a good idea. What else you got?
Well, we got a skirt steak. I don't see those very often in a grocery store. In the wholesale, we do a lot of that with restaurants. Skirt steak are excellent. Matter of fact, I had a big group over, a large family, with our large family, and I did skirt steak with a nice rub on it, and that ended up being really, really good. Most steaks, I'm for just doing a good salt and some pepper. Some steaks will need a marinade. I find skirt steak to do extremely well with a nice rub. Put a little spice to it, almost like a Latin flair, of so to speak, and it just turns out excellent. Skirt steak is not cheap. It's not any cheaper than your ribeye and strip, I think, nowadays. And I don't see it very often in grocery stores. And also make sure that you have at least a USDA choice or a better grade than that. Choice is good enough. When you get to a lesser grade, then you're missing out on some of the fat in there, which really gives it that great flavor. You know, there are some less expensive cuts for really big groups or just that's what your budget allows you to buy. You can go to a top round steak, a London broil. They give it the name London broil sometime, even though London broil can be cut from various cuts. A top round steak really needs a marinade. Marinate at 24 hours or so, whatever you like that marinade to be. And that does really well. And then once it's grilled to where you think it's done, let it rest and slice it on a little bit of an angle, just like you almost do a flank steak. And that could serve a lot of people for not a ton of money. And the same with a full cut sirloin steak, if you can even find them in a grocery store anymore. Back in the days, the butcher shops, Cindy, you probably know, they had these big sirloin steaks with the bone still in it.
Definitely, yes.
And it had a piece of filet in it also, which was always, if I knew where it was, that's what I was going after.
Definitely.
So, again, that's one of the other great steaks. And then there's some smaller cuts that you can get, like a hanger steak and a flat iron. Some of the leaner meats, like a flat iron, they need to be cooked really hot and fast, and a flat iron is as thick as it is. You can't cut them any thicker because it's a small muscle. The hanger does a little better on the grill. Again, that's a great cut for a wood fire pit or a charcoal grill. And then, of course, for large groups, also flank steaks, I love it. Do a couple of really nice flank steaks, and I'd like to put a little marinade on that, maybe some Asian marinade or something, not too much soy, but just really nice, or a nice Italian marinade. And I take usually a couple of forks, and I have that flank steak on my cutting board, and I just poke a whole bunch of little holes in it, just to tenderize. It's almost like a tenderizer, and then put in that marinade for a couple of hours and grill it. And when that thing comes off the grill at about medium rare, let it rest a little bit and slice it on an angle, and you can feed a ton of family with a couple of flank steaks, and they shouldn't be too much money either. So very nice stuff.
Can you talk about the grading process, Eric, and explain to people what the difference is?
The grading process is a government, is done by the government, USDA, and most meats that you find in most supermarkets are graded choice, and you'll see it on there. And it can't just say choice, it would have to say USDA choice, United States Department of Agriculture. Anything less than that, then you're asking for less fat, which is not necessarily the right thing to do because you're automatically getting less flavor and mostly less tenderness also. So go with a choice, go with an Angus choice. An Angus by itself is not always necessarily a top grade. That could also be less than choice. It could be a select, which is the grade down from choice. Anything in the prime, you're pretty much always good on that one. It could be prime Angus, it could be prime anything. And ask the butcher if you have that chance, unless you're in just a supermarket where you're picking off packs of meat, where you can ask if there's some age on that meat, just wet age. And it gets a little bit more complicated that way, but that would make a difference also. But I think the USDA choice or prime is really what you should be looking for if you want to really make a difference with that steak. A select and less you can pretty much bet your life you're going to have to put it in some marinade one way or the other to get it tender enough and flavorful enough. And that's why I like to use only sea salt and maybe some pepper on a really good piece of beef. With prime, I would almost not marinate anything. I would just use that sea salt or kosher salt, whatever you like, and add some pepper to it maybe, and just grill it and let that meat flavor find its own way. It's there. You don't have to put a marinade on it.
Not to be sacrilegious, but non-beef, what else do you recommend for grilling if you're cooking out? What else is on your list?
Well, there's lots of things. We like to do a lot of chicken, and we're particular about what chicken we put on the grill. But we have a particular kind, and I think you can get it at certain supermarkets. It's an air-chilled chicken. The skin gets crispier, and I absolutely love it. And I have a gas grill, I have a charcoal grill, and I have a fire pit, so I can do whatever I want whenever I feel like it. But if I on Monday we did some chicken breast with the skin on, some airline breast, and I have some fire logs in a tub of water constantly, and I put one of the fire logs on the bottom of the grill and cook the chicken on the shelf a little bit up, and the grill is on high, and that grill is over 700 degrees, and it almost roasts the chicken, and at the same time that wood log starts smoking, and you put a little smoke into it, and you're
so
playing
kinda,
around.
You kind of hot smoked it a little
that's,
bit.
That's a cool idea. I like that a lot, Eric.
And it's fun. It's just fun. And it literally only, it's on there for 25 minutes, but you get that bit of smoke. And then, of course, not overcooking the chicken is always a great thing to do. And a lot of times people say, wow, your chicken is so moist, and what's that smoky flavor? And I think it's a great way of doing things. Chicken is great on the grill. It's inexpensive. And, of course, lots of sausages out there nowadays. Get some good sausages on the grill. There's nothing wrong with that. I love that, too. Your ordinary hamburger and hot dog is never, you know, it's always good. And then there's some game items that you might be able to get that you can put on there really fast. Just spent some time in New Zealand, and we ate venison just about any possible way. I went to, for 8 days, we did all kinds of farms and processing facilities. We ate venison everywhere, and a lot of it they grilled to rare, medium rare at best, and it turned out really good. And venison is a very lean meat, and just a little pepper and salt on it, and it was absolutely fantastic. So plenty of game birds out there that you could grill, you know, other game meats. Other than that, pork ribs, of course, all day long. Now you're talking barbecue. You can do butts. You can do spare ribs, baby backs, a little bit more involved. It's not a fast thing. You need to pre-cook these things one way or the other, or steam them, or boil them, or however people like to do it. There's 1,000 different ways you can make your ribs. And then lamb. And again, a lot of people aren't into lamb, but I love some good lamb on the grill also. And that's usually my fire pit will be ready for that one, and I cook that on the fire. That firewood really interacts with the fat on the lamb, and it does the same thing on some really good fatty beef also. You know, fire pit really works on everything, but with lamb, I think my lamb comes out the best when I have it on a fire pit.
Two questions for you. One, do you ever have all three outdoor cooking implements going at the same time and have a full-on three-ring meat circus?
There's been times.
Yeah, I bet.
There's been times that I did, and it was just for
fun.
That's
awesome. That's super fun.
And the fire pit is by far the most fun thing, you know, you use the grill for other things, and everything has its own application. But there's been some parties in the past where you have 30, 40, 50 people running around, and there's pots and pans, and it's everything going. The last time we did it with a whole family thing for my mother-in-law's 85th birthday.
Wow.
And it was a seafood cookout, believe it, going to the butcher's house, and it was nothing but seafood. Yes, Tony, the answer is yes. It happens once in a while.
So you send out an invitation, three-ring meat circus at the Oosterwicks.
Mm. I sure will. You have to do it one day.
Any vegetables involved?
Lots of vegetables, yes.
What are your favorite vegetables for grilling?
You know, I always do my own garden, and this year for the first time, it seems like I'm going to have a record garden because I actually put a fence around it, which I was always objected to do, but the deer had a better cookout than I did.
Yeah.
And finally I said, you know, I'm not doing all this work anymore and let it just take it down. So I love my zucchinis. You know, I usually cut them in quarters the long way, so you get four long strips, and I don't let the zucchinis get really big out in the garden. Of course, grilled whole tomatoes on the top shelf, you know, slowly, so they almost get like, they almost like boil and you know, on the higher part of your grill. I love grilled red, orange, and yellow peppers. Cut them in quarters, put a little marinade on it, like a light Italian marinade or something, and just grill them to the point where they get a little bit of that black on there, and they get nice and soft, and with still a little bit of crisp in it. And leftovers on those is fantastic in the salad the next day, and the juices that come out of it could be your salad dressing. It's really great.
One last question for you before we let you go, and we appreciate your time. Did you have anything for lunch? Because I didn't, and you're making me crazy.
Well, my usual is a yogurt, two boiled eggs, some fruit. I had a banana, had a Gouda cheese sandwich, which, of course, I
so
have
every day. So you've been thinking about this stuff all day.
Yes.
All right.
Yes, no
love well, you, Eric. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks for having me, and I appreciate it. And anytime, you're welcome. Bye-bye.
Have a happy summer.
Care. Yeah, you too. Take care. Bye-bye.
Well, again, that was Eric Oosterwyk from Fells Point Meats. Well, it was fun talking to Eric.
Sure was. I love him
so
much.
He is a wealth of knowledge.
Yes.
When we come back on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine, we'll be talking to David Alima from the Charmery about ice cream. I'm always ready to start with ice cream.
Yay, can't wait.
And then after that, Lisa Godfrey from Godfrey Farms, where those all-important summer peaches and ears of corn are coming from.
I can't stop smiling. It's just...
It's happy food. It's summer food.
A good thing.
All of that and more on WIPR. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're talking about the good stuff. Cindy's got a permanent smile going
right
now.
Oh, yeah. I'm so excited. I love ice cream.
All the happy food
and
of summer.
And David. Mm.
We've been talking about grilling, and now it's ice cream, as you said. Mm-hmm. We have with us Baltimore's ice cream wizard, David Alima from the Charmery.
Oh, I like that.
Wizard.
It has a nice ring to it.
You have to get a wizard hat.
Yeah.
Wear it when you in the shop. Although you have two shops now, don't you?
We do.
Congratulations.
Yeah,
that's super
amazing.
Exciting. Good for you.
Thank you so much.
Where's the new shop? Tell us.
It is off of York Road in Towson in the Annesley, Stoneley neighborhood, Rogers Forge. It's like 12 neighborhoods that meet right there.
But there's a lot of people over there that need ice cream.
Wonderful.
You'll find it via the line of children outside, I'm sure.
Exactly.
Good for you.
So, ice cream, what happens seasonally to your business, to what people buy, to the traffic? That's the thing. We're talking about what happens, and all of a sudden you want different food in the summertime. And I'm sure, I would guess that you guys spike, if for no other reason than I probably eat 3/4 of my ice cream in that one season of the year.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely our season. We gear up for it. We're ready for it. We hire for it. So, you know, we survive through the winter. Baltimore is a great ice cream eating city.
Good. It's good to know.
A lot of amazing.
Where is that list? They have us on a lot of bad lists. We got to be on one of the good lists.
Exactly. They should just talk to me. I can tell you everything great about Baltimore.
That's
how I'll have to connect with the Visit Baltimore people.
Perfect. But yeah, summer is certainly where, you know, you have to have a great summer.
Yeah, you're out of school, right?
It's ice cream eating season.
It's the same thing. You give yourself permission in the summertime. That's the thing.
So, but now that it's summertime, what new flavors, and how do you decide on what you're going to develop, and what inspires you?
Everything has kind of changed in our production world because we're moving our production facility over to the Union Collective. And to go from one shop to what will be three, we're going to open a retail front there. In Hamden, what we used to be able to do was if we ran out of a flavor, we could just replace it with one of the flavors we had made.
Sure.
And it gets a lot trickier with three. So now we're going to have sort of a set menu, and that will rotate not as often, but certainly still rotate.
Mm-hmm.
So I get, you know, what inspires me really is I try to think about, first and foremost, is our city here and what I ate growing up, what kind of is special about Baltimore in the summer. You'll see that kind of thread running through our flavors, especially in the summer. So lemon stick is like the perfect example. You know, I remember going to the book festival and just getting that lemon with the peppermint stick in it. Never quite, I was never very good at eating them, so I just combined them all together.
I've never heard of that.
I had one of those in my entire life.
I don't understand. Like, what is this?
This is not functional.
No, it's not that functional, but it is delicious. You take one of the soft peppermint sticks, and they dig a hole, and you kind of put it right into a lemon.
Oh.
And then you suck the peppermint stick and squeeze the lemon at the same time.
Yum.
And you get this,
I've never heard of that. That's fun.
Yeah. So okay. We made an ice cream based on it, which is way...
It's fun once.
Yes. It's way more easy to eat.
So the ice cream is lemon and peppermint.
Yeah.
Cool. What other inspirations?
You know, I do a lot of reading and researching. And, one of my favorite things that we do as a production team is we'll go to the library and, go to every single section of the cookbooks and turn to the very back where they have desserts and kind of think about what they're eating for dessert in Tanzania or and can we make that into ice cream and will it be successful, and playing around with that. And now that we're not just churning out flavors, I used to want to do two new flavors a week. Mm-hmm. Now that we're able to have some time and really kind of develop flavors a little bit more, I'm really enjoying the process of it. I can tell you right now we're working on one that I'm pretty excited about, which is a graham cracker, Madras curry powder, and pecans.
Ooh. And it's just, I love Madras curry powder.
Me too. And I was just thinking about what would go well with graham crackers.
Wow. Yum.
And I thought it could use a little bite.
That sounds good. So. Have you ever made a saffron ice cream?
We do. Yeah, we've done a couple. I love saffron.
So do I.
And
it's one of my
love it in
things.
Ice cream. Mm-hmm. We've done a saffron olive oil. Mm. And then we've done a saffron rice pudding. So basically create a rice pudding and it'll kind of have the crunchy kind of bits of rice. And
so the biggest hit from something that you thought was crazy and the biggest flop from something you thought that was crazy that the people would love.
Well, I knew people. I made I tried to do a Super Bowl 7 layer dip. And do
doesn't it have black
chip.
Bean dip in it?
It was unsuccessful. It never made it to the cabinet. Okay. But
avocado right. in there.
Yeah. Mm. It was
yikes.
A good try.
All right.
Just a little bit. You would need a beer with it to make it palatable.
Wow. You could call that ice cream aftermath.
I would say the biggest hit, we do an event called Ice Cream for Breakfast. And with that, we'll do kind of breakfast-themed flavors. And this,
like bacon?
We've never done bacon, but we did a biscuits and gravy flavor this year, and it kind of worked.
Wow, cool.
It was, so we basically made biscuits into essentially croutons, toasted them with butter, and then we, you ready for that?
Yes.
We juiced some sausages.
Well, ooh. Like you do.
Ooh. As one is wont to do.
Oh, my gosh.
And it didn't quite give us the punch. And then so then we added some mushrooms in it to give that kind of umami flavor.
Wow.
And somewhere.
They're not big pieces of sausages in the ice cream?
No, just the juice. So I would say the essence of sausage.
What if one wanted?
That's another shop. Of, yeah. That's another flavor. Another
That's another shop.
Shop.
I think I just got rejected.
If you, hey. If you want me to make some sausage bits in it for you, I would do that.
My brother went to military school in Virginia, in the middle of Virginia, and sausage biscuits were, biscuits and gravy were breakfast every day. So now maybe when he turns 50, I may ask you for a small quantity of biscuits and gravy ice cream.
I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it again. I don't know if I'll
now
ever
gonna
get
cut,
it to
now
work
I'm
going to
cut
again.
His hair to a crew cut again. So.
If he does that, then I'll definitely do it.
And so what changes in what people ask for in the summertime? What goes away from the other three seasons of the year flavor-wise, and what comes on strong?
Yeah, I mean, we certainly keep our cabinet seasonal. So we don't have strawberries. There's a theory you have to have strawberry ice cream at all time at an ice cream shop. And we don't believe that, and, we use strawberries, so I want the
right
best.
Right now, they're great this year.
Right. So we use strawberries in our ice cream, and if there's not great strawberries, then we don't do it. And then same thing with the fall. Fall becomes a super fun, I look forward to the fall flavors, I think, we do a butternut squash and clove flavor, a sweet potato one, and winter has its own flavors as well. So, you know, every season kind of has its special things about it. Definitely a lot of fruit flavors. Now, we did one last year that we're kind of working on bringing back, a cantaloupe and rosé.
Oh, you know, that
just
good.
You know, it just like that's what I want to do
want
in the
that.
Summer.
Yes,
you're a good salesman because Cindy doesn't like rosé.
Oh, stop! Do you make sorbet too, or just ice cream?
Okay. We do two non-dairy flavors at all times: one coconut milk based and one sorbet.
Yeah,
and we're certainly, you know, we start out with one non-dairy flavor, and now we have two, and you know, I'd be open to going up to three as we're continuing to see the sales increase in those. I think as it gets super hot, like there's nothing like a sorbet.
I love sorbet so much. Yeah,
me
I agree.
Too.
It's the lack of dairy makes it so much more refreshing.
Palatable.
I think. Yep, exactly. Yeah. And you can mix it with other stuff, like alcohol.
Like alcohol.
I'm curious. Now your new store is open, what, 3 miles away, 4 miles away from?
Yeah, it's about a 12-minute drive.
Okay. What are the top three flavors in the new one? What are the top three flavors in the original Handmade store?
It's really hard to say because we opened on Friday. So, but so far, you know, the one flavor that's going gangbuster in both places is this flavor called Ice Cream Sando, which is basically, it tastes like eating ice cream sandwiches, like classic ice cream sandwiches. We found a great source for these wafers, and we grind them into dust, and then we put pieces in there. So every bite, whether you have a piece or not, will taste like that ice cream sandwich that I love so much.
I love ice cream sandwiches, too. That's one of my favorite things.
Yeah. There's something about them.
Yeah. I don't know what it is either. I mean, it's just, you know, maybe childhood memory, but
And getting
tasty.
The like, 3 fingers worth of, like, wafer on your finger, and then at the end, like, just 3 fingers.
It's funny how this, I mean, obviously the place you're coming from is the place we were sort of talking about from the beginning of the program. It's that channeling all that happy childhood food stuff. I walked past in a grocery aisle a couple of days ago, Nutter Butters. Tell me that you have made a Nutter Butter.
Oh, absolutely. I loved Nutter Butters growing up.
I did a peanut butter base. I never get them again. I ate so many of them.
The problem is it didn't work out tremendously because anything with like that wafer in it will turn soggy because once it sits in the dairy.
I guess you just need a cone made out of that wafer.
Ooh.
Now we're talking.
Yum.
Or just put one right on the side.
Why not?
Yeah.
It reminds me, we started doing something last summer, and I'm really excited to do it again. We bought a bunch of local watermelons. And instead of, like, making a watermelon ice cream, we made fresh mint ice cream. And then we, like, put a slice of watermelon in the bowl next to it.
That's nice.
And
That's awesome.
It was such a fun, like, it looked so beautiful. And it was such, like, another way to incorporate all this great local produce that we have. I think I want to do like a cochinita one, maybe make an ice cream and coat some corn with it.
Very good. You live in fun world over there.
I do.
Have you made corn ice cream?
We have, yeah. We did a corn on the cob flavor, which was just like, you know, brown butter and salt and corn. And then we've done a little, I forget some of the other corn ones we've done, but corn ice cream is fantastic.
Anything else from childhood that you inspired the ice creams or local product? You said there were a couple of things.
I just went to the Otterbein Cookie Factory, which is one of my favorite places on earth, as soon as you open that door. And I remember growing up, every Friday night we'd have a bag of that red bag on the table. And so to be able to put those in ice cream has been...
That's nice.
You know, and it's just, I just keep thinking about it. And now that I have a daughter of my own, it's able to like kind of see things through her eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm like having a lot of fun with that and trying to pick up inspirations from her as well.
That's great.
So does she have a favorite?
She is a chocolate and mint chip combo. My son, vanilla. But he's a young one, so it's I got time to work on it.
Vanilla has a lot of power on the young ones.
Yeah, it does. It's.
I love good vanilla ice cream.
I have
a thing wrong with that.
When someone gets vanilla, I think that they might be a connoisseur. Because, you know, that's like the baseline flavor. That's like what you, if you want to check ingredients and like the basics, always try vanilla.
So you talked about a lot of exotic ice creams and vanilla. Are there times with your production team that you guys talk about ice cream and someone will propose something and thought of as either too normal or too done?
Yeah, no, is the short answer because, you know, we want to make things that are approachable as well. We have our seven kind of like, we call them always flavors. We always will have vanilla, malty chip, telltale chocolate. Like, we want to make sure that when someone comes in, if they want just vanilla with rainbow sprinkles, I got nothing wrong with that. What we try to avoid is flavors that, like bubblegum is a good example, because that's a flavor that doesn't exist in nature. So unless I'm using natural, artificial flavors, which we really try to avoid.
I really couldn't stand bubblegum ice cream when I was a kid.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Someone gave me one, and I was like, you wasted a quarter. That's gross.
I tried to make a bubblegum ice cream that was kind of like, like it was like banana, like it was kind of, I was reading about this, like someone attempting it. I gave it a go to kind of recreate the flavor of bubblegum through natural, through fruits. And it was a delicious flavor, but it was not successful as bubblegum. Hmm.
So. Interesting.
Is there one last thing about ice cream that you think people should know before we let you get out of here?
Well, you know, this Union Collective is this building that's happening. That's where our production will be. And it's going to be, like, I'm so excited about the other businesses that are coming in. It's all these businesses that have kind of decided to take their next big step in Baltimore. And, you know, there's, like, the Baltimore Whiskey Company, and I can't wait to make ice cream with them. There's Huckle's Hot Sauce. I can't wait to make some. We've done hot ice cream before, and I look forward to it. I think the key is, like, when you're experimenting at home, like, ice cream is the most amazing blank palette. And like, there's so much that will work in it because it is such a great starting point that, you know, I've definitely thrown ice cream away, but you know, you can really use your imagination and kind of soar with it. That's what I love the most about it.
We've been talking to David Alima from the Charmery, the original location in Hampden. It's 36th and Chestnut, right?
Perfect.
And then the new one that's just opened is on York Road in Stoneleigh, headed towards Towson.
Yeah.
Retail at the Union Collective, right?
Right off 41st Street.
And if people want to hear your story or see what you guys are doing, they should come to your website.
www.thecharmery.com.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Thank
thanks
you.
For thanks for joining us.
Yeah. Especially at the crazy time when you just opened the Stoneleigh store.
You must be
very
busy.
Oh, but this is fun. It's so fun to take a minute and talk to you guys and step away. And
all the best to you, David.
When we come back on Formidable Phone Food and Wine, we'll be talking to Lisa Godfrey about those treasures of summer, corn and peaches.
Yes.
All of that and more on WIPR. Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're talking all good things summer, and those, of course, will be food things. We've covered grilling, meats, sausages, all kinds of goodies. We talked ice cream with David Alima from the Charmery.
Wow, did we? That was fun.
Ice cream, both normal and unusual.
Yeah, and unusual, right.
And and I think my two favorite things to eat all summer when I was a kid were peaches and corn. Mm-hmm. With us now is Lisa Godfrey from Godfrey's Farm in Sudlersville on the eastern shore of Maryland, little town in, how big is the population of Sudlersville, Lisa?
Oh, I don't know. It's very small, maybe a couple hundred.
Because I've driven through there so many times now, and I'm trying to think if there's, I don't think there's a traffic light.
Oh, there is. There's one traffic light, yeah.
Okay.
How dare you,
sorry, that
Tony.
Was kind of a trick.
We even have
that
a
was
water
kind
tower.
Of a trick.
All right. Yeah.
So we've worked with Lisa for a long time for the spectacular asparagus.
Yeah, I was going to say, thank you so much for the asparagus you send to us because it is a joy to work with.
And thank you.
Absolutely delicious.
And strawberries are terrific this year.
Mm-hmm. That's exciting, the strawberries.
But let's talk about those two things that are coming up that honestly, I'm excited about, and I've been excited every year since I was five, about corn and peaches and what it's like to grow those things and what the season's like this year. What, you know, kind of what you normally expect and what's different about it this year?
Well, they're different in that corn's an annual, so we plant that every year. So we can sort of adjust year to year of what we, you know, where we made mistakes with varieties or with planting too much or not enough, and try to adjust that. Where peaches, it's a long-term commitment. You wait 3 years to get peaches, and then you kind of have them for the next 10 years or so. They both have, like peaches have several different varieties. So you start with the early peaches, and then you keep changing varieties until you get through the whole season. So our season usually starts around the 4th of July and ends a little bit after Labor Day for peaches.
So what varieties of peaches are you growing?
Lots of them. The big ones are Loring and Red Haven. Everybody has to have those. Crest Haven. There's lots of new varieties with names that have numbers in them that don't have quite the romantic name that Loring and Crest Haven have. They're more like PF 17 and PF 16A and all that. But they're great peaches.
Can I have 5 pounds of PF 16A?
I'm never going to be able to remember that to order.
Yeah, when people call, they're like, when are you going to be picking those 27As? Nobody says that.
Do you have a favorite?
I'm a big fan. I like Loring. And I did say 27A. I like the 27As. And those are the ones that are, you know, there's like the big season for a couple weeks in early August where 5 or 6 varieties all kind of climb up and come on together. And that's when you think of like the big peach eating and all that. They're, you know, you're well into the freestones. And so that's when we decide to have our festival to celebrate peaches.
So you guys have a peach festival down in Sudlersville every year?
Yeah, the first Saturday in August.
That sounds like fun.
Are peaches, I know strawberries are a pick-your-own. Are peaches a pick-your-own also?
Yeah, we do pick-your-own peaches for 4 weekends in the summer, and we try to hit those, you know, those main, the big varieties. We don't really open up pick-your-own when we're in the before they're freestones, because nobody likes to, well, not nobody, some people will, but most people who put peaches up, they don't want the non-freestone peaches. They want to have a nice freestone peach they're easier to cut up.
Freestone meaning that the pit is a lot easier to get out of there and deal with.
Yeah, they call the other ones clings, and they're all the early season varieties. And they'll, you know, you eat them kind of like an apple. You sort of eat around them or chip off pieces, where once you get to the freestone, you kind of make a nice clean cut and pop the pit out, and then you have, that's probably the kind you guys like to work with.
I like the ones that are
taste
sweet.
Good.
That's,
yeah. All we care about is if they taste good or not.
Now, are you guys growing any white peaches?
Yeah, we do, and we also have some the donut peaches. They're those little white flat ones. They look like donuts, and they're really good.
Yeah, they can be
really
incredibly sweet. Right?
Yeah.
Getting back to, you were talking about the sort of the commitment that you all have as farmers. You know, coming up to 3 years to wait. What's that process? You're planting, and then waiting 3 years, and you're, you know, bearing fruit until for 10 years. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, they so you plant them as little whips, they call them, and you know, you have to, you know, keep the weeds out, and you start pruning right away. So you have to prune them every year, and then they'll start making peaches after the second year, but you won't get many, and you know, it takes a few years for them to get big enough to really start, you know, producing, you know, lots of fruit.
That's the same cycle as a grapevine for wine growing grapes.
Yeah, I would guess it's similar. You know, asparagus works the same way. You have to wait for 3 years.
How do you keep the birds away from the trees or squirrels or whatever?
Well, we don't. We pretty much share.
Okay.
our biggest, the deer are hard on small peach trees because they rub up against them and knock them over.
Wow.
And we'll try to replant those. But we just kind of try to work with them.
Yeah, I came. I went to Europe one summer, and before I left, I had three. Believe it or not, I planted three peach trees in Roland Park at my old house, and they were just full of peaches when I left, and I came home, and there were hundreds of peaches on these trees. Not one peach was left. Not one. Not one. I'm like, no. How could this have happened?
Well, yeah. I don't think you guys have all the crazy squirrels on the Eastern Shore too much, do you?
Yeah, we don't see a lot of squirrels, really.
That makes a big difference then.
Now, with peaches, take people through just for a second. In a typical year, about when do they flower? When does fruit set? And when do you harvest? So that just so people have an idea of how the season actually runs.
Well, they'll start budding out and making flowers. Hopefully, it's in April, late March when that happens. When you get a lot of warm weather, like a couple years ago, and like in February, then the blooms will open up, and then if you get a hard frost, then that'll kill all the blooms, which will in turn make you have no peaches. So we like it when the weather is cold and stays cold all winter, and then, you know, preferably turns warm in April and then kind of stays that way. That's the perfect weather for a peach. But then so you prune them during the winter, you prune the trees, and then after they bloom and we're pretty sure we're going to have a crop, we'll go in and we'll stem them so that we get pretty good sized peaches, because they're a lot more marketable than lots of little peaches. And then they'll bear fruit anywhere from, you know, like I was saying, the different varieties, anywhere from early July through Labor Day.
So if you would, take us through corn also.
Corn.
Give us an idea of what that cycle is during the year.
Yeah, Tom will start planting corn early April, and then he'll plant every 5 or 6 days to make sure that we have, so he'll do that so that we have a crop of fresh corn every day through. We kind of do corn a little past Labor Day. We do some wholesale corn into September. But he has to get out there about every 5 days, 4 days, 6 days. Sometimes you can plant, if you have a lot of rain and you can't get out there, you can plant like a early maturing variety that doesn't need as many days to maturity to kind of cover up for a gap. The goal is in growing sweet corn for market is to never have any gaps, so you can give your customers a nice constant supply.
So you have just a slow, steady harvest, so you have to plant it slow and steady.
Yeah,
for that to happen.
Right. Each planting, you know, you can pick for 4, 5, 6 days, but then it'll get too big and it won't be as good. So you only have a few days to pick each planting.
It would also be impossible to try to harvest giant fields of corn and get it to market all at one time too, right?
Yeah, well, see, you would do that for somebody like a processor, but, you know, for grocery stores, restaurants, roadside stands, you know, they want to come in every single day and get fresh corn. You have to kind of keep picking every day.
What varieties of corn do you plant?
Well, we have three different kinds of corn. We have what they call a sugar enhanced, and then we have a white super sweet, and then we grow a bicolor super sweet. The sugar-enhanced corn we sell here at our market and to a lot of farm stands. It's typically more of a tender ear. It doesn't have quite as much sugar as the super sweets do, but the tenderness, people really like that. And that is also has a shorter shelf life. So that's where these guys come in and get it fresh every day. And, you know, our retail customers, they expect corn picked that morning. And then the super sweets resell to bigger customers, more like grocery stores and even, you know, restaurants that want to keep it in their cooler for a few days. They can't, you know, have it that day every day. And it's got a sweeter taste, not quite as tender. Although they're they work on varieties constantly, and they're always trying to make the super sweet more tender and the sugar enhanced more sweet. So they're always working towards that.
So what is your very favorite thing to do with corn and peaches in the kitchen?
Well, I almost never make it to the kitchen. I eat peaches standing around the barn all day, every day.
that just made everybody smile.
Yeah, that sounds good.
And then I also eat sweet corn raw every morning just to taste it and see how it tastes, what it's going to taste like for everybody. But when we go home, I'll put sweet corn in the microwave and cook it that way so we can eat corn on the cob. Both of my daughters have braces, so they'll have to cut their own off the cob. I don't really do it for them.
Now you have some blueberries, right?
Yes, we do.
You have coming up a special blueberry event, don't you?
Yeah, I think the last time we spoke, it's been a while, but the last time we spoke, I said I wanted to have a bluegrass and the blueberry patch event. My husband won't let me call it a festival, so I just have to call it a day.
An event.
and we did. We put that together. It's really fun. It's my favorite day. We're going to have a couple bluegrass bands, and we have a pavilion that's just right next to the blueberry patch. And so people can pick blueberries, listen to music, and we have moon bounce and some games for the kids and wagon rides and stuff like that.
That's great.
And
that's a
nice, fun, laid-back day. You know, you bring your lawn chair and sit back. We have a food truck coming, and then we have lots of blueberry pies and blueberry muffins and all that kind of stuff. Kettle corn, all the...
Yeah, you were bragging about your blueberry muffin the last time I saw you.
Well, I didn't mean to brag.
Well, but modestly, I mean.
But it's the only thing we do from scratch. And like I said, I'm not much of a cook, but I think I like the blueberry muffins. I think they're good.
And if people want to learn more about that, what you guys grow, other events that you have, is there a website that they can go to?
Yeah, our website is godfreysfarm.com. Or you can just Google Godfrey's Farm and we should pop right up. We'd love to have you come out and visit. So we're wrapping up the strawberry you pick now, and then the blueberry you pick will start around the middle of June, and then the peach you pick will start around the middle of July, late July.
You got summer all set up.
Yeah, that's the goal, to have something to do every weekend.
Well, thanks so much for taking the time. We know you're busy.
Yes, thanks, Lisa, so much. It was great talking with you.
I appreciate you thinking of me.
Absolutely. Bye-bye.
All right, bye.
Well, that was fun. That was great talking with everyone.
That was fun. Makes me hungry for the rest of summer.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
If you want to download this or any other episode of Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine, go to the WYPR website, wypr.org. Look for the Foreman & Wolf page, and there's a whole menu there for you. If you want to correspond with us, please send us an email, foremanwolf@wypr.org. If you want to follow us on social media, Chef Cindy Wolf.
You can follow me on Twitter as Chef Cindy Wolf or on Instagram as Chef Wolf.
My Instagram is The Real Tony Foreman. Thank you so much for listening.
Happy Sunday.